I'd say one of the biggest challenges is our the constantly changing nature of the crisis. So each week, especially the first 4 to 6 weeks, the situation just kept unfolding and changing constantly. And so getting to decision points, you know, would then add clarity to work our faculty and staff had to do. So for example, once we decided to finish the spring term by converting to online instruction like many and most colleges and universities did, our faculty had decisions made. They knew what they had to do, and it was a lot of work. It was very, very difficult to do that. I think we had 95-97% ability to switch everything to an online format to finish spring. And, you know, the exceptions were things like a welding lab or heavy equipment operation or those sorts of things where you just can't do that online. So our faculty were very creative. They changed some of our lectures to online, you know, our safety lectures and our, you know, certain parts of it. And then we are finishing up some of those classes over this summer with safety measures in place. We were able to finish, with an exception from the governor, some of the safety-related programs like our nursing, our EMT, fire academy, those sorts of things. So those were able to get wrapped up. The nursing was a big challenge because the hospitals for a period of time up here did not allow our clinicals to be finished. But once things calmed down with the pandemic, we were able to get those students graduated. Some of them a little bit late after the semester was formally over, but it did work out.
Well, that's good. So they were able to finish their practical component.
Correct.
You've been doing online teaching for a while, so you have the basic structures in place, but still it's a massive expansion. Have all your faculty been accustomed to providing online curricula, or was that something new for many of them?
Well, at Shasta College, we were about a third online at the start of the spring semester. We're tending to see wait lists for students and more demand over time in that area. I think they're trying to balance their commutes and their work schedules. When you're in half online courses, it's a little easier to plan your work and other duties, I think. So a lot of our faculty were very experienced, and it was not a transition at all, but many of our faculty had not done online work. So there was a lot of adjustment, a lot of learning our faculty had to do, a lot of support we tried to provide through our classified staff and other opportunities. We actually, it was somewhat unique, we decided to move our spring break forward about 2 or 3 weeks right after we decided to go online to give our faculty a little longer time period to adjust if needed. And so that was difficult and had its challenges, and our faculty were really heroic in doing all the work and all the learning to adjust overnight to this situation.
Yeah, the rapidity of the onset of this has got to have been really disorienting. What kind of reports are you getting back from students about their experience with online teaching?
Yeah, there were lots of reports back from students and a lot of help we tried to provide. One of the big challenges we heard and tried to provide solutions for was, you know, lack of connectivity in some of their homes to the internet, or high-speed internet at least. It's difficulty having the right devices to be online. I mean, many of our students were choosing not to take online courses because obviously they preferred not to do it that way. So the students had many, many challenges to overcome. Our foundation stepped up. We did some fundraising and had some other funds that could be reallocated and helped with purchasing and giving out many devices to help students connect, or Chromebooks or those sorts of things, and as well as emergency grants up to $250 for students. So our foundation helped. The CARES Act money came in. It was difficult to get that distributed, but we did distribute out about $1.7 million to students through the Federal CARES Act money. So that was a big help as well. But still, there are areas in our northern communities where there's no cell service. So a hotspot doesn't work. There's no good internet connections, or it's very expensive to be able to do that. So that's still a challenge we're working to overcome. We have ordered and will have installed this fall, as we're remaining I'll say primarily online. We are arranging, as safety allows, for some of our science labs and some of those difficult courses to be able to do labs on campus with appropriate safety measures and social distancing for fall. But we've also ordered some equipment to put in our parking lots so that we can allow students to come and connect to the internet, you know, in their cars if there's no other way for them to do that. And so that's another solution we're having for the future.
Interesting. So you've created a hotspot there. I understand that the state at least had intended to provide roving hotspots for rural areas and to increase connectivity. Have you seen any of that?
You know, I've been trying to follow that as well. I haven't seen any of it yet here at the college or our ability to participate in that. Besides, you know, we purchased and we're loaning out hotspots to students. And again, sometimes that worked and sometimes it did not because of just the locations of various homes and whether or not certain cell towers reached certain areas. But yeah, I'm very interested in the state's effort to help close that digital divide, and the emphasis they're putting on that is a positive result of this pandemic, although I think it's taking time to come up with the solutions.
I know that Google and I think even the PUC, oddly, had provided quite a few devices in the state, but you sprinkle those around, they don't go all that far. Have you been the beneficiary of any of that?
To my knowledge, the college has not been a beneficiary at this point.
I think it was mostly intended for elementary.
Yeah, I think it was a K-12 focus. So
here we are. Spring term is essentially at its end, but coming right down the pike is our summer sessions, and then there's the fall semester. How are you planning for that, especially given so many unknowns?
Yeah, so for this summer, we had decided early on to move as much as possible, majority online. Our enrollment for summer looks very close to last summer, and we might be down 1% or 2%, but you know that looks pretty close for us. For fall enrollment, it's a little too early to tell, to make comparisons at this time. But we did open enrollment methods for fall, so that's starting. We're trying to make fall majority online as well in anticipation of a possible resurgence. So the decision was made because we felt the disruption that happened by a middle of the semester transition this spring had to happen, but was very challenging. So by making a decision earlier to do more online in the fall, it kind of removed that disruption potential and provide more certainty for our students and our faculty for fall. So I anticipate higher demand in fall, but it's hard to know. And nothing's typical right now. In a typical recessionary period, demand skyrockets for community college opportunities for retraining and for education. But this is such a different scenario that we don't really know. Will there be a surge in demand? Will being mostly online be a discouragement for some of that demand? Will, you know, all these questions are being discussed around the state, and it'll take time for us to figure out where it really ends up.
Am I correct? Your student population is something just, your total student population is something just north of about 9,000?
In a typical semester, yeah. In a year, we have 12 to 13,000 different individuals who will enroll in courses, typically. And for example, this summer, we have a little over 5,000 enrollments, but it's all part-time. When you add it up to what's a full-time equivalent, it's, you know, around 550 full-time equivalent students over the summer. And in a typical fall or spring, it's around 3,000 to 3,200 full-time equivalent students and around 9,000 headcount.
Could you just very briefly explain how the role of community colleges has changed in the last decade or so? They've become much more central to the fulfillment of higher education.
Yeah, what's really satisfying at working for a community college, especially here in the far north, is we are the community's college for the most part, and we're the gateway to the opportunity for educational pursuit. And so, you know, anywhere from career programs that are focused on, you know, nursing and fire technology and the other industrial areas, we're the place people pursue that for the middle class. And we're a very important part of our communities. And then, you know, for transfer, you know, it's a very affordable way to get that first 2 years of a four-year degree completed. So, You know, it's fun to be at a community college in far Northern California where we are such an essential part of the community. You know, the move to online has been a very interesting twist, although Shasta College, like I said earlier, has been slowly growing over the years to being about a third of its course offerings online. There's still a lot of students who want to mix that online and face-to-face reality in classrooms. So, and then a lot of programs where it's just kind of almost a requirement, right, to make it a successful learning environment. And then to try to be responsive to the community needs. As community needs change, especially in our career tech areas, we try to offer certificates and programs that meet the needs of our businesses and industries and try to be more nimble in those areas to be able to make changes. And our partners are great in the business community, providing input to the curriculum and the needs they have for their employees. And so that would be a summary of how essential our community colleges are in our regions.
Great. Let's turn to budget. The California legislature released its budget yesterday, and it's much more favorable, apparently, to education, including support for community colleges, than the governor's budget. This will all get hammered out by June 5th, when it's legally required that the budget be submitted. A whole bunch depends on whether or not federal aid is forthcoming, which is a big unknown right now. That must be a nightmare for you. How are you sleeping?
Oh, you know, I'm sleeping fine. The budget is the most volatile I've seen since the Great Recession. I've been here at Shasta College since 2007 and its president since 2011. So having that length of service and ability to have seen how we can react is very helpful. We're better positioned as a college than we were before the Great Recession. We have a good reserve account and have some other funds we've built up for our healthcare liabilities that we didn't have, 12 years ago. And so we're positioned to be able to adjust without overreaction is kind of the way I explain it. Don't have to make quick decisions that aren't well thought through. But that being said, the state's budgetary approach this year is just full of uncertainties that are new and different. And so you're right. The governor's approach is, well, here's the cuts you're going to take unless the federal government comes through and provides some relief. And the legislature's approach is, we're assuming the federal government's going to come through and provide billions and billions of dollars. And so here's what you can plan on. But then if it doesn't happen, then we're going to, mainly for education, do these massive deferrals where you expend the money this year and in a future year, we'll pay you back for it. And so basically borrow from all the education district's reserve accounts like ours that I was mentioning earlier that's helping me sleep at night. So very, very different approaches. And you know, if I had a crystal ball, I'd say I hope they end up somewhere in the middle where it's not all borrowing from the future and I call it a little more realistic approach. But, you know, the governor's proposal of an 8% general fund cut, but the expectation of still educate the same number of students and keep doing what you've been doing is a big pill to swallow as well.
And you were actually expecting, I think, an increase in funding for community colleges, say, 6 months ago.
Yeah, very, very different from January, where there was proposed in the governor's proposed budget in January increases in funding to the system in the hundreds of millions of dollars range. And so it is a vastly different picture. As I listened to and talked with economists, I kept hearing the last couple of years, well, is the recession looming? It doesn't look like it. But we're expecting one because we haven't had one for so long. And then this pandemic made it a reality very quickly.
Pretty much a guaranteed recession, if not depression. We can only hope that economy rebounds quickly when...
Correct. And I think that's what the legislature's betting on, is that, you know, the economy might rebound more quickly than the governor's assumptions. Or the federal government will come through get us through a year with one-time money. And then I might be on this call with you at this time next year talking about the same thing.
Right. This could almost be, I'm sure this is almost a yearly thing, though. It's not new. So there's got to be a lot of competition for resources in anticipation of shortfall. If you were to describe the competition between departments right now, would you say it's more like a tea party or more like a gladiatorial event?
And you're speaking about the various major state spending areas?
Well, I'm thinking about internally within Shasta College.
Oh, internally, okay. Well, internally, you know, at this point, I think it's the more collegial description, the more teapot. Again, because we have been fiscally prudent over the last 10 years and built up some reserves and built up some other funding streams, it's a crisis, but it's not an urgent crisis. So there's time for us to make adjustments and make changes. There's not a mandate of you have to find, you know, an 8% cut in your budgets and report back. We did go through our budget, and as we were first developing it, it was a little more robust, and our team went through and we identified about a 1-2% reduction right away. And then over the last couple months, we've found a few more percentage points that we can take out. And then every opportunity that presents itself, we're 85% people, salaries and benefits. And so if somebody says, hey, I've decided to retire or I've decided to move on, we're very careful at looking at, okay, do we have to have that position right now or can we delay it? If we have to have it, is there another person we can transfer over there rather than delay a backfill in that area? And so, you know, already since January, we've reduced expenses by about, oh, I'd say about 2% by making decisions like those over the last 6 months. And so those sorts of things are ways we're preparing. And again, having the fiscal prudence we've had over the past 7 to 10 years, we have a strong reserve where if we need to use some of that over this coming year while we continue to make adjustments, we can. So that's why I'm pretty comfortable. Not all organizations are in that same boat. And I do expect, you know, once the budget is finalized by the state, if it's closer to the governor's budget, that we may be seeing other organizations having to make more difficult decisions. But that's where Shasta College is at this point.
Do you anticipate receiving any grants from private foundations?
You know, we have some grants from private foundations that are multi-year grants, and at this point, we anticipate those continuing. I haven't heard of any opportunities, although we're watching all the time, where private foundations may have grants to help provide relief for these unprecedented potential cuts. There were couple of foundations that were providing relief to students and providing opportunities for grants or scholarships on higher levels than they had in the past for students. And we've tried to help our students be aware of those opportunities.
Good. Joe, last question. This is your opportunity to say absolutely anything you want.
Well, that wasn't a question, but I'm happy to answer it.
Joe, is there anything else you'd like to say?
So I'd like to just say that, you know, the community colleges and Shasta College and others in the North State do play such a vital role for our economic and educational opportunities for the communities we serve. And the most difficult part of situations like these in recessions is right when our communities need us the most, we have typically surges in demand for retraining, for educational opportunities because of higher unemployment rates, and people are looking at a way to improve their lives and get a fresh start, and they come to us for that help. That's right when the state says, well, we don't have the funding to provide additional funding, and we're even going to cut what we've done for you in the past. So that's the most difficult part about these situations, is wanting to be there for our residents and having those challenges thrown at us because of the way we're funded in the cycles. They're just counter-cyclical. And so I'd like to say that we're going to do everything possible to serve our residents as well as we can and provide as many opportunities as we can to meet their needs. And I think all of our community colleges would resonate and endorse that message.